So with deference to Michael, who is going to present the ontology of ontologies, right, session.
All right. So Pat Hayes and I were tasked with the job of coming up with this ontology of ontologies. And I have to admit, I still feel kind of a little uneasy about the phrase. To be a little more conservative, it's something we've been talking about all morning. Really what we're after is identifying the metadata for ontologies, but not just to describe ontologies just for the heck of it. Right? We really want to be able to do is support the sharing and reuse of ontologies. I mean, this is the whole reason why we're all here. It's the reason ontologies kind of were born out of the SRKB project, the shareable, reusable knowledge bases, and we really, you know, about 20 years on now, we really should be demonstrating sharing and reuse. And so the point is, well, what kind of metadata can we use to describe ontologies that supports this? Now, the phrase ontology of ontologies, you know, again, so last year's summit, the output of last year's summit was a framework where what we tried to do was to characterize what you might call this menagerie of things that people call ontologies. And it is really quite a diverse collection. Ken Wachowski has done a great job of kind of doing a very fairly informal survey and trying to identify or describe the different ontologies that people were discussing last year. And again, the goal last year was to allow diversity without divergence. That was kind of one of the slogans. And minimally, what this framework was supposed to be doing was to allow us to compare different ontologies along some kind of different kinds of dimensions. And, of course, one question this raises, and we'll see in a few minutes approaches to this, is, well, along a particular kind of dimension, what are the possible values that we use to describe ontologies? So, now, again, so in this framework, any description of ontology in this framework would kind of constitute the metadata for the ontology. And so to the extent that we have a common shared set of metadata, we have an ontology of ontologies. So I don't want this to be like a grandiose kind of thing. And you know, again, because we may not have completely agree on what this common shared set is, although I think we have done a lot of work. When I say we, I mean everyone in this room and people not in this room have done a lot of work to kind of move in this direction. And I want to focus today. I'm only going to have a few slides here, and then I'm going to open it up to chaos. But I think one of the things I want to focus on is kind of keeping an eye on the pragmatic applications of this. I mean, whatever metadata we identify and start to use, whatever metadata we identify should be something that allows users to do various kinds of tasks. We want to be able to retrieve ontologies for different domain applications. You want to be able to retrieve ontologies for designing new ontologies, reassembling pieces of things that people have done before and building new things. And you also want to have enough metadata around it to describe an ontology that you can start making judgments, either as an end user, is this the right ontology for me, or as a designer saying, is this the right set of ontologies I need to use to build my new ontology? So what came out of some of the discussion, the email discussion, was there are a couple of different kinds of logical metadata. Things like what ontology representation language are you using? Is this ontology modular or not? Some of the things we just talked about earlier this afternoon were different kinds of relationships among ontologies. And so that's kind of like logical metadata, logical properties of the ontology. In addition, there was also a lot of engineering metadata where you're kind of considering the ontology as an engineering artifact. And so this would be coming up with notions of provenance, versioning, version control, and things like this. And so some of this discussion is kind of summarized on the website. And I don't really want to, because it's there, it's archived, we can point to it. I don't really want to talk a lot about it because, again, realistically, we have less than an hour. We're not going to solve all the problems here today. What I want to do, though, is start the ball rolling. Peter does a great job of keeping the Ontolog site together, and it's a very interactive way of working. And so what I really want to do today is just kind of get enough things in the air that, again, things start moving, and we actually walk away from this summit tomorrow afternoon. We walk away with some set of objectives, something that we can each do when we get back home and post back to the Ontolog website and actually accomplish something. And so what one thing to really do is, I say, to keep things grounded, start collecting ontologies from summit participants. Each of us in here is either an ontology designer or an ontology user or someone who builds like ontology kinds of environments. We're all dealing with ontologies. And so what we really want to be able to do is identify, make this concrete. I mean, we're still, even in this past session, I mean, we're still talking kind of abstractly. And let's start making things real. And it's not just collecting ontologies, actual ontologies, right, things that we are using. But it's also collecting scenarios, so the use case scenarios in the UML methodology, so to speak. That we want to do is there are proposals for metadata out there. And so that's the other thing. I really personally don't have too much more to say about ontology metadata, because the ontology metadata vocabulary, OMV, unfortunately I don't think we have any people from that project here today, is a pretty decent first step in this direction. And somebody, I think at the last telecon, mentioned something else called OntoSelect, which is trying to do this as well. So we have, and also the logical metadata, I mean the logical properties of ontologies are fairly well defined as well. So we're not starting from scratch here. We are starting from a place where people have been starting to do work. What we really want to do is, like I say, populate it with real ontologies and start evaluating, you know, do some of these approaches like OMV, are they adequate for describing metadata in ways that we can actually use them for some of those applications I showed on an earlier slide, right? And so just as a, you know, kind of a scenario I just kind of threw together as an example of something we want to have as a scenario, right? I mean, Alice says, you know, I want to build an ontology that supports interoperability among, say, scheduling software systems in a company. So she needs to have a time ontology, a process ontology, resource ontology. So she goes to this repository that we will hopefully be building in some way. She finds a few different time ontologies, so like Owl Time and the catalog of temporal theories. Finds a few process ontologies and maybe a folksonomy of, you know, machines and materials. And so the question is, well, what does Alice need to know about each of these ontologies and the relationships between these ontologies in order to make rational decisions about which one is the best one for me for the task that I'm doing, right? So that's really what we're after here, is how do we describe the ontologies to actually make this decision? And another point is, well, who are the users? Because, you know, this is something also we also have to keep in mind here. Ontology designers are one kind of user, right? So, again, I want to build a new ontology that's extending something that's already there or that's combining different ontologies that are already there in a way that maybe those original designers hadn't anticipated. So we need to, you know, minimally be able to talk about things like, can I consistently combine these different ontologies together without things blowing up? Or can, you know, is this ontology extendable in a certain way? Or can I only take a piece of a particular ontology that's in the repository and take that piece out and extend that piece without extending a whole other ontology? Another kind of user is ontology application developers, right? It's like, I'm not designing a new ontology, but I need to use these ontologies for a decision support system, for doing ontology-driven search, in different kinds of applications. So that's the other thing we want to be able to do. And again, we're not going to achieve this all today, but if we could at least start identifying, collecting different ontology applications that people are working on, okay, not just, oh, I heard somebody, you know, working on this, so I think this is a cool application. Applications that we are actually working on now, right? What are they? And what do you need to know about an ontology to actually make a decision about if there are two possible ontologies to use for your application? What would you need to know about that ontology? Right? There are some other kinds of questions I'm not sure we really had addressed in earlier kinds of discussions. Right, so suppose there is this ontology in this repository. Right, there's these general questions like, you know, what is this ontology about? You know, how are we going to describe that? How has this ontology been used? Are there other ontologies that reuse this one? Or if I pick this ontology, which other ones does it use? Because if I'm going to use this one, I also have to pull out everything that it depends on. What body of knowledge was used in the design of this ontology? Right. Again, was this some kind of controlled vocabulary that was out there and somebody actually added on some axioms in a particular ontology or presentation language? Was this an industry standard? Again, that is kind of being ontologized, if that's a verb. What are other alternatives to this ontology? And how are these alternatives related to each other? How are they different from each other? Again, this isn't a quality question, but it's a user question. I mean, I got to use some time ontology. I have to use some kind of resource ontology. You know, how do I pick between them? And another point that was raised earlier this morning, I don't know if implementation is the right word, maybe encodings is a word. So this was kind of related to the OWL time versus common logic time ontologies, right? I mean, they're both talking about time. They have a significant amount of overlap, but of course they're not the same because there are things you can do in the common logic time ontology you can't do in the OWL time ontology, but there are other advantages. And so these are some of the questions, you know, that I'm not sure if they were covered earlier. But again, questions that we want to use to evaluate different proposals for metadata. And then just coming out of this last, this came just out of the last few minutes. Right, so is ontology metadata subjective, and to what extent is it become objective? And so to me, if we're talking about an ontology of ontologies, then we're really talking about some kind of objective metadata and objective criteria for evaluating the metadata. And another thing is, I'm going to open it up pretty soon here to chaos. And so when we are talking about the ontologies that each of us are working on and actually building a repository that we can use, it might make sense to maybe find some restricted domains where we have more chance of success. So the Stanford, people working on the biomedical ontologies, maybe that is something that, is either something we focus on or something that we use as a kind of prototypical example. But what are other domains that people are working on here that are not biomedical and that you really wish you had a repository of ontologies that you could reuse? And then I lost it here. I think it was this here. So one of the issues I had here at the beginning. So again, there was this ontology framework that we kind of was the output of last year's ontology summit, and again, various dimensions were proposed. And Ken has been had put together a kind of a evaluation in terms of these. What do you call those diagrams? Radar diagrams. And so one of the questions that came up, was, when you're comparing ontologies, there's maybe some implicit notion of metric. So how do you kind of compare ontologies along a given particular kind of dimension? So that's kind of this point here. What are the possible values? And I thought I had, here it is. So this is from the OMV manual. And so a couple of the, let's see where we're here. Okay, so one of the criteria, one of the metadata they had here was the ontology language. So you have here the class. So OMV is an ontology of ontology metadata. So it's about the closest thing we have to an actual live ontology of ontologies. And so, for example, there's this, one of the classes here is ontology language. And, okay, so that's great, that we have, that's one of the things that was identified in last year's framework as well, that identify what your representation language is. So then the question is, what are the languages that we are saying are going to be possible values of this, class? And so OMV restricts it to these, although they say it can be extended to support additional ones, right? But these are the ones that they have currently. But, again, a question for everyone here would be, what other languages are up here, like output common logic myself up there, personal preference. But also just to kind of in the spirit of last year's summit, there were a lot of approaches that were not necessarily formal ontology representation languages. There were several semi-formal or even informal approaches. And so, you know, how would they fit along this particular dimension? Another thing I just want to illustrate. So one of the aspects of ontology metadata that's going to be very important is also ontology, you know, how has this ontology been used? Right? We just finished discussing that. So you want to be able to say, have some sort of controlled vocabulary for saying, well, I've been using this ontology for ontology-driven search or for decision support. Right? We don't want to have this to be a free-form texting description of what you're using ontology for, because then we'll just end up with this problem of, well, how do we search for everyone's different description of ontology-driven search? Now, again, OMV has some predefined ontology tasks here, which, you know, again, we can debate these if we like, or add more, because again, it begs the question of, first of all, we want to have some kind of agreement on what are the possible ontology tasks, ontology applications here. But even then, once you identify one, what's the agreed upon definition? So this is just kind of like one data point. Again, OMV's out there. People are working on it. I think the Stanford group is actively implementing it and applying it. Not implementing it, applying it. Right. So again, what I want to focus then, just use the remaining time. First of all, to identify, I mean, are there people here that, these aren't exclusive categories either, but are there people here that you're an ontology user that not in one of these categories here? Let's kind of recognize that and add it. And then also, to kind of, again, start identifying ontologies and scenarios. So then I'm going to, chaos can now ensue.
Sorry. The classes of your users are very important for me. So I would identify the subclasses, so users classes. And machines. Machines are users. I don't know if you've got them in there. Agents, automatic, I don't know how to say. You know what I mean, right?
Well, I'm thinking that, so
non-human.
When I'm talking about the users, I'm talking about us as the people who are using the repository. So I
build something that will query the repository and use it, and that will not be a human agent. So non-human agent, I don't know if that you would consider that a class, but I expect that will happen pretty soon.
Okay, I'll add that in here.
So you may have quality control people. So if you're building a formal ontology for some domain like accounting, you may have people from the accounting board who want to inspect this ontology and see that you haven't contradicted their accounting regulations. Similarly, in medicine or engineering or any of the professions, or in the case of government, you've got somebody who's responsible for writing a set of government federal regulations, and they want to see that you've encoded them properly. So, quality control people.
Mm. Yeah, so governance, actually, yeah, you're right, there's another dimension here, so that might be combining two there. Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. So maybe it's kind of
governors.
Confusing here. What I'm really trying to get at here is like, who are the users? Is just to kind of identify that I want to put this onus on everyone here. Okay. So how would you, as a user, either as a ontology designer or end application developer, what would you be looking for in the metadata of the ontology repository? What would you be looking for in order to use it? Well, these are all domain users. The ontology designer.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So Bruce.
One thing that's been kind of nibbled around here, and Frank probably addressed it most directly, is a metadata that describes says who. And sometimes says who, I mean, I keep hearing quality is, you know, goodness, light, somehow a correctness. If you developed your ontology, let's first say there's a connection between data and an ontology. I presume everybody agrees with that. If you're the regulated community trying to report data according to an ontology, then you care about who says that this is the right ontology to be going against. And let's say that is an Environmental Protection Agency. And where does it get it? Out of the Code of Federal Regulations, out of legislation. You can be sure the ontology is going to be ugly. It may be correct. It may be exactly what you have to report to, but it may not be truth, light, and all those sorts of things. So I think a very important thing is who says that this is the ontology that should be used?
The microphone back.
So is this question about who are the users that are going to use the metadata of the ontology or also the content of the ontology?
Well, so, you know, again, we have OMV is out there. We have last year's ontology framework. So I really think that what we need to be doing is coming up with actual ontologies that would be put in the repository, actual scenarios that people are encountering today, because we wouldn't be here if we didn't think there was a problem, and identifying what those are and then evaluating the adequacy of some of these existing approaches like OMV to see whether there's an adequate set of metadata there. Right. So what do you think is missing in kind of current approaches? That's kind of what I wanted to focus on. So,
me? Yeah. So not totally wanting to derail the conversation, but maybe I'm being naive, but if we take a big step back here and look at what we're trying to do here is we're trying to describe what the metadata should be for a given resource. Well, isn't that what the library community has been doing for so many years and the information science community and OMB and all these other projects, are they mapping to things like the Dublin Core Initiative? That has, you know, that lays out 15 core elements that should be associated with a given resource, electronic resource. That things like format, type, creator, the various things that matter in a library, like provenance and things like that. I think it's really important to make sure that we ground, because a lot of the libraries are already communicating with each other through the Dublin Core Initiative, and for at least to be compatible with or mapped to Dublin Core elements.
Well, definitely OMV addresses a lot of provenance issues. I don't think it is necessarily Dublin Core conformant. But it's also the case, I think, that when we've been talking about, like, a lot of the different examples we've been using today, you know, again, has been how has this ontology been used, right? And so what kinds of problems was it designed to address? Right. These are the kinds of things that, again, OMB does not really explicitly kind of address, but that's something that I want people here to start thinking about.
Well, that's the point of Dublin Core, is that you sort of take the core details that you need to associate with a resource, and then you extend it to say, here are how other people are using it. And you can extend it. And I think that more effort should be placed, my own personal viewpoint is more effort should be placed on figuring out who are the users, how is it being used, rather than trying to sort of recreate the wheel in many ways in terms of trying to define what are the core things that we need to associate with a given resource, because it's done. I mean, it's a done problem. It's an ISO standard. It's an ISO standards. It's been around for a long time. And so, I mean, why not evolve from Dublin Core rather than sort of recreate a big chunk of what the Dublin Initiative has already done?
Okay, so we have that's one point on the floor.
Do I hear an implicit request to send you some use cases?
Yes.
In just text based?
Well, not me. Not sent to me personally.
Well, send them to me. I'll distill
post
them
on. I think post them to the wiki pages.
Okay.
Right.
But just text based. Not UML diagram stuff.
Yeah, like just initially, let's just start collecting these on the wiki pages.
And if you don't know the format for use cases, go to Wikipedia. They have an outline there. You don't necessarily have to fill out all the thingies, just most of them.
Yeah.
I just have a very quick point on the last one, the regulatory agencies. I mean, there will be different regulations for different countries for, say, you know, renting a car or something. So
yeah,
you have to.
I was experimenting momentarily with collecting people's comments live. I think that's a mistake.
Coming from a totally different, again, from a different viewpoint, but I want to ask you a question, and then I have a comment to make. Everything there except for automated agents and quality evaluators has ontology in front of it. I'm not an ontology developer at all. I am, in fact, a user. I'm a modeling and simulation user that federates models and simulations work together.
Right.
And I've heard very little about being concerned about us as users. And here's what I mean. Yes, you're asking it right now. In all the discussion, which I didn't bring up in the last going back and forth, and even what you showed with OMV, those are very nice metadata, but there's almost no transparency as to what's within an ontology. And an example I'll give you is I've come from my own field of underwater acoustics. Well, there's a wave equation. You can solve the wave equation. You can linearize it. You can come up with another equation. We'll give you the name. From that, I can get 35 solutions. What I need to know in metadata is, in fact, what you use as assumptions to get the solution that you wanted, because every one of those solutions can give me a different set of answers based on the same equation. I have a parabolic equation. I can solve it in a number of different ways, and I get totally different answers. Where in all this structure do you start talking about the transparency that tells me all those fundamental concepts that are going into why I'm putting what I'm putting there?
So the assumptions and design rationale behind the ontology.
Well, somebody has to provide that, and that has to be implicit within the ontology. And I'll go back to say I haven't heard it addressed to us as users. I've heard a lot about ontology developers and not how they go to the user and set a set of requirements that says here's what an ontology ought to be to meet the requirements set forth by the user community who's out there and going to be using it, whether it's doctors, whether it's engineers, whether it's whatever.
Right. Well, that's what I'm trying to get at today, is trying to find what are those, you know, I kind of put you in that second bullet there. I mean, you're developing applications of an ontology. No?
Okay. No.
I'm a user of an ontology out there that says, hey, wait a second, if you want to do this kind of thing, there is a model that exists out there, and I want to federate, let's say, a number of models to answer a question about, I'll give you an example. What happens if I bring new money into a country and I want to see what happens with an underground economy? I've got to take into account cultures. I have to take into account economic conditions. I have to take into account the social attitudes there. And I want ontologies that are out there that allow me to look at those relationships, bring them together, go to a decision maker so that they can make a decision. I don't want to put $1 billion there because I'm not going to get friends. I'm going to get enemies. That's where I'm coming from, which is not an ontology. I'm a user, but I want these fundamental pieces down there that I can go to so that I don't have to go and find out all that stuff myself.
Okay. You had your hand up earlier, so.
I did. I'll go ahead and say this. I'll also mail it or post it later. The context for the Air Force Enterprise Vocabulary Team might be a good one. I mean, we are the EVT. We are ontologists, and so, you know, we're thinking that way. But we are essentially a tech support team for people all across the Air Force who have never heard of ontology, don't know what it is, but pass data back and forth in the course of their business processes. Now, because of a laudable effort to move towards services instead of highly redundant stovepipe data systems, have to provide some semantics and, you know, in many cases, trying to develop these from scratch, they don't know what semantics is either. I mean, these are all words they wouldn't use. But I imagine the subject matter experts being able to go to a repository and say, has somebody given good definitions that make sense to me that for these terms that I use, like equipment types? And if so, were those users, people who did this, were they also working with similar processes, or do they have different things in mind? So this is, these are things the users would want to know before they would be able to say, hey, EVT, come here. Will you help me reuse this?
Well, yeah, so first of all, it sounded like you were talking about quality there because you wanted domain experts to evaluate.
Well, the approach within the Air Force is that sort of a combination of high quality expectations and decentralization, so that, you know, the people who generate personnel data are responsible for coming up with quality models and providing quality data, but they don't. There's no outside measure of what that is.
Right. But I think the other thing too is like the.
But it has to come from them.
Right. But the other thing too is like design rationale, in a sense, like why is this concept here? What were the assumptions that? What are kind of the restrictions of this ontology? What assumptions were built into it?
Absolutely. A lot of the existing non-interoperability has everything to do with those differences of purpose. And although there's an overriding authority-based acceptance of definitions and so forth, there is also the purpose-based acceptance that is very important in that context.
Right. So again, things like design rationale and these restricting assumptions and kind of the background hypotheses here. So we need to have some way of if we're going to be capturing this in our ontology of ontologies or inside the metadata of the repository, is how to capture this in a way that, again, is as objective as possible.
Given that it's relatively difficult to get into the talking sequence, I just want to throw out three quick disjoint comments, if I can. So one is just another domain, potentially a mainstream fundable source in addition to the medical domain, would be sensor networks. So even just this Wednesday here at NIST, there's a workshop on sensor harmonization, and there's an increasing amount of interest both in networking and instrumenting real devices, but then having to integrate all that data. So there's been several workshops in the past few years about metadata and formats for sensors, and a lot of that trying to draw from ontology research. So just another area. Second, there was a question earlier on the board about, you know, is metadata subjective or objective? And clearly there's both. So, for example, one that I think is overlooked quite frequently, especially among this crowd, is the underlying objective computational complexity of the ontology language, right? So even when there's things included like the language of the ontology, it's not necessarily descriptive enough. So, you know, you look at a library and all the ontologies are in OWL, but 80% of them could be an RDF schema or something, just a simple graph language, right? Whereas I, so say, from a sensor network perspective, wouldn't be able to run these on very simple processors. I need to know in more detail what's going on. And that's concrete criteria, metadata about the ontology that gets overlooked. And then the last one was about this notion of an ontology of ontologies. I think there are other examples out there. So the first thing that comes to mind to me with that phrase is actually the way Ontolingua presents its ontologies and how it breaks up different classes of axioms and objects. And, you know, that's sort of, it's providing a structure to the ontology. By the same token, the way that PSL presents its ontology on the web is an implicit ontology of ontologies, where we have core modules and then conservative extension modules. There's a set of required primitive objects, there's primitive axioms, and then there's a set of the richness of the ontology built on top of that, and that breaks apart the ontology into different parts. And it's something that I, as a user, find very helpful to go and look, well, this is what's needed, and this is just helping me out. Right. So, thanks.
So Mark, you had your hand up earlier, and then...
I did. I'll be brief. I just wanted to say, in response to your initial question, with the exception of OMV and Dublin Core, I think almost all other metadata are going to be subjective. We've talked about design rationale. We've talked about user ratings. We've talked about, in the case of BioPortal, we have a facility where users can actually leave notes as to what they like and what they don't like. That's also metadata that's important for the ontology, and all of that is going to be highly subjective. I think where this community can actually make the most impact is by moving beyond OMB and thinking about seriously how to create structures by which this subjective information can be stored so that we can understand better what ontologies are good for, what they're not good for, knowing that although that information is subjective, it's better than no information at all, as the Essays of Animal Library shows.
Right. Well, see, but the challenge there is to provide enough structure. So just even now when I asked, you know, for application scenarios, like how are people actually using ontologies? Well, the question comes up, well, can I just send you free text? Am I supposed to send you UML diagrams? So right, already there's a need to have some sort of structure there to actually communicate the important, the essential points.
And more important, if you provide that structure, you can see what's been left blank.
True.
I'd like to suggest maybe a case and study where something is very precisely defined to begin with, you know, like a standard that's out there. And I happen to have only one experience in writing standards, and that's for ANSI N15.36, which has to do with non-destructive assay of radioactive material, measurement and control. And to just take the final draft of that, which is out for public review, so it's in public domain right now, and apply the rules that you're proposing to that one very precise standard, and then, you know, kick it back to people who hear, you know, like Robbie, who are familiar with that particular subject matter as well, and see if it holds together to do what you want it to do.
Oh, sorry. Could you state your name just for the record?
Yeah, this is Jim Disbro.
Ravi.
Thank you, Jim. The point I want to make is that there is a class to be added here. You have clubbed the users like what the last gentleman who was standing there, he described, those who are concerned about the subject matter of ontology and the algorithms that go in it. They all fall into some kind of designers or application developers, but you need to somehow explicitly show domain users by their interest area.
Yeah, I mean, this actually wasn't supposed to be metadata for the ontology. This was meant to be as a way of just kind of organizing people. Because if you're a designer, you're going to be looking for different kinds of things in the repository than if you're a domain kind of application user. So that was the only reason I interested.
Second comment relates to the other gentleman sitting here. I don't know your name, sir.
Bruce
Bargamer. That if you look at the Sarbanes-Oxley software, it is as ugly as he describes the ontologies that will be doing regulatory work to be as ugly. So you don't want that kind of overhead on organizations to comply. So the third comment I have is about the Dublin Core and FGDC metadata, in which also I have participated a little bit. They are relating to nouns only. And ontologies encompass both nouns, verbs, relationships, and they are much richer in concept. So the static description of metadata is not going to serve, although it will be a subset. FGDC metadata and Dublin Core would be a subset of what we will ultimately come out with ontological metadata, because there is no notion of relationships and processes there.
Can I respond to that? Just briefly.
Sure.
So maybe I'm misunderstanding, but my understanding of what this ontology of ontologies is supposed to be is about an ontology as a whole. Therefore, it's just another resource that can be described by Dublin Core per se. You're not talking about the elements within the ontology.
So Leo had his hand up earlier, so...
One of the issues, I wanted to raise it in the last session, but we ran out of time, was that, you know, the metadata and the gateway and quality criteria really obviously go together, but something in between this all-or-nothing approach from the previous session is that You could have stages in the quality that are governed by certain values in the metadata. So when somebody adds an ontology, if they satisfy the simplest criteria, whatever they are, and whatever values they have, they're in stage one. And if they want to go to higher ones, though, they have to meet more stringent requirements. Stage two, stage three, it's a way of structuring the metadata, and it could be significant for the user or developer to know that, oh, these are stage five highest level ontologies. I'll start there. Just a suggestion.
Frank?
Yeah, two comments. One is there is the sort of facility that Leo described in ISO 11179. But beyond that, there's another class of users who are students who might be reading fundamental model of anatomy because they're trying to understand anatomy or other sorts of things like this. If the ontologies get to be good enough and we have good enough tools for browsing them, then they might become educational material. So that was the one comment. And the last comment is there are some kinds of metadata, such as assertions that a particular ontology is a partial order, which can be mechanically verified. And I think that those are the sorts of things you would want as a minimum quality requirement. If you have a cycle in your taxonomy, you know, you can't get into the repository. Or maybe you get in some funny status saying that this has got serious problems, folks.
This is equivalent to the KISS ontology.
No, the KISS ontology, as far as I know, is the question there was relevance. It was not, if it only has a single term, it can't have any cycles.
So level zero would be the criteria
for the KISS-like. Yeah, but... some languages actually allow for cycles, right?
Right. So it has to do with metadata or the language or something.
Yes. So you may not want to rule it out if it satisfies the language, right?
But you know, again, the reason why I kind of had that slide on users was to kind of make you think about what are you looking for, again, when you are choosing between multiple ontologies or browsing ontologies, what do you need to know about that ontology in order to actually effectively reuse it? Right, that's the kind of question I want people to kind of walk away with here.
Just a quick comment on the BioPsych family of databases that are ontologies embedded in them, but they cover lots of different organisms, and the organisms are curated to different levels. So if it's just machine-generated, and actually the notion before came up about evidence codes, that may be relevant for some of this conversation as well. But the ones that are just sort of computationally generated, the pathways that are computationally generated from creating genome pathway genome databases are at one level. Then there are ones that have had some annotation, and then there are ones that have been curated to very high levels so that the user does know what they're getting involved in.
But just like kind of thinking in terms of like domains, how many people here are working with ontologies in a kind of a biological domain? Okay, how many people are working with ontologies that are not in the biological domain? I see almost everyone else. So if you can maybe randomly here, like what are these domains? What other kind of domains are you working on? In the sense of are there ontologies out there that you can reuse, or if not, is it because you haven't been able to find them? Like what? I'm trying to get a sense here of, because like I say the biological community is kind of, especially around the Stanford group, kind of working on their repository for that aspect. But like, what are some challenges that are outside of that domain that we need to be paying attention to that we're not paying attention to?
A quick question, which I don't expect an answer, tangential to this: do these questions apply to rules also, which I have not heard addressed yet? If your knowledge representation requires the use of rules, like SWIRL or something, questions apply also.
Look, when I say ontology, I am talking about anything in any formal language, so by all means it has rule. If someone, I won't say anything because I'll probably get in trouble here, but boy, ontologies are more than OWL. Oh boy, for sure. Okay, let me calm down. Okay. You get it first.
Well, so in a general sense, an ontology is thought by a lot of people to be a model of something. And the people that you're talking about that aren't on your list, the category of the people, are the people that are interested in that model, whether they're students or whether they're doctors or anybody else. They have an interest in the model. And they surprise the developers of the ontology a lot. I build ontologies, and I don't think anybody's going to look at it as a model except for the developers, all the people you have on there. And then somebody who's interested in the model and comes up and talks to me about it. It catches me by surprise all the time. So however we want to put them on that list, they're there.
No, exactly. I'm trying to collect input from people here. I mean, that's what the whole point of this was. I'm just trying to facilitate this kind of thing. So, I'm trying to get at how are people interacting with ontologies? How are they using them, reusing them, sharing them? And what are the barriers that they're facing? Because that's what we want to make sure that the metadata addresses so that people can do that stuff. Ken?
Yeah. Ken Butzlowski. Returning a little bit to the what you were just talking about, scenarios, I think it would be very helpful if we identify not just that it's a scenario, but to evaluate it, to determine whether it is a best practice. And actually, one of the way that the OOR team originally, at least, addressed this idea of quality and gatekeeping was to look at it from the point of view of best practices. So we would establish a corpus of best practices that you could look at rather than to have some sort of explicit gatekeeping criteria. So I think there's some experience with that in OBO, if perhaps Mark can comment on that. But I've seen some reference there to best practices on your site. So it seems to me that there's already experience of this with some groups. And it would be good if we also went down that route and actually, cited in our scenarios. Do we regard this as a best practice? Is it a candidate for best practice? On another point that I haven't gotten to, I wasn't able to get to yet earlier, the ontology of ontologies takes ontology as being the unit, but I think that's somewhat artificial. I mean, the presumption is that ontologies will be modularized in some way, which means that you could actually be annotating something a lot smaller than what you'd think of as being an ontology. Somewhere, you could actually annotate and give provenance information for something a lot smaller than an entire ontology. So it would be good if the ontology of ontologies at least, was clear on exactly what it was annotating at what level. So that, one could, in principle, annotate something really much smaller than an entire ontology. Mm-hmm. Well, in some of these ontologies that I deal with, individual subclass relationships might actually be annotated with, who believes it, and what... where did it come from? What was the rationale for it? So it could be a fairly, fine-grained annotation in some cases where it actually matters a lot.
Another example is it could be viewed as some subset of an ontology, and you could say that, so for example, if you were looking at the FMA, Foundational Model of Anatomy, and you wanted to say, the brain part is really not developed there at all. So the best way to do that is not to say it about the whole FMA, but to, apply it to some context.
Ed Barkmeyer, NIST. To go back to the observation made earlier, if you look at the Dublin Core kind of thing, first of all, I'm going to say that's a very crude mechanism for managing anything. But the fact is that that's all a whole set of librarians from around the world after many years of fighting with each other could agree to. It's how standards get made. Those of us who've been doing this for 25 years realize that standards get made by getting to the only thing everybody will agree to as distinct from whatever's best. So the question here, however, with that is that even so, the WebDAV folk and so on have made efforts to manage documents as groups of documents, documents that are composite. And so it really is a very meaningful idea, even in the library case. I mean, you can look at a reference, for example, that is a publication that is a set of papers from a conference. You know, they're not even necessarily related, or if they are, there's one article that relates many of the other papers together. Those kinds of things can also be done to ontologies. So it is a very meaningful idea to talk about segmenting a document. And it's also the case, as you know, that somebody will look at a book written by some author and say, this guy is really great on subject X, and he doesn't know his ear from his elbow about subject Y. Okay? It's very important when you've got an ontology like that to be able to sort those pieces out.
Amanda Weisdom again. A couple of comments. One is agreeing with this idea of being able to segment in various ways, but I also want to emphasize that a little piece of an ontology is often also an ontology. It's just an ontology with a different line around it. And that brings up the related point that we've been tending to talk in terms of domains or sort of subject matter or activity-oriented definition. And there's some experience, only some of which is mine, but experienced by very hardworking, smart people, that suggests that actually the domain-based authority designation or interoperability is not particularly useful. It tends to be more based around specific processes or operational activities and information exchanges within them. That's where agreements get made. That's where people come to consensus on definitions. And that's where, you know, it means one thing over here and it means something different in that one over there. So having the ability to have reuse of pieces of ontology without having to break out every conceivable subset of an ontology for comment, you know, having some robust and dynamic way to annotate a bunch of stuff from an ontology could be very useful. Last, you were earlier asking about domains, and just to throw this out there, the Air Force has a cert in general, so there's health services stuff in there, but some of the other areas that get worked with, financial information, payroll information, personnel information, including highly private personnel information, you know, equipment types, and their maintenance, fuel costs, you name it, buildings, rent, leases on buildings, you name it, they got to deal with it. So it's all there. There's nothing outside the bounds that I know of.
Right, and so then the issue in those cases is how do you, you know, is there an upper ontology that describes these domains that then people use to describe, oh, this ontology has been designed for this particular domain?
Well, it's very interesting because there is and there isn't, and it there's no absolute rule now. I mean, in the case of the Air Force, there's a combination of policy and pragmatic consensus that governs this, which is that groups only get authoritative status over some area, some kind of data, by being given that through somebody that's designated to do so by the Secretary of the Air Force. However, in practicality, a lot of things overlap, and a coordination panel that involves representatives of all the functional areas meets and hashes out who's going to deal with it. And pragmatically, I mean, realistically, I think that's probably good. Now, it means that sometimes the resulting ontology might not be any good to somebody else, but that's because the relevant policies didn't apply. But that's precisely where this kind of metadata can be so useful.
Yeah. Leo, and then...
So a couple points here. First of all, the notion of portions of an ontology... I think it's good to keep, at least for the high-end ontologies, keep close to a theory distinction. So view of an ontology as a theory or a portion of a theory. That seems to be a kind of a good module. Theories, in some sense, are, you know, a set of
assertions and rules, et cetera, about some portion of the world which is self-consistent, perhaps, we hope, and separable from other theories, in which case you really want to judge, in some sense, the theory, at least for what it's supposedly doing. In other words, it may not be complete because you don't need a complete theory for whatever your intent was, but it's a way of judging then, you know, what circle to draw around what object. But this leads then, you know, to a notion of an ontological space, if you will, embedded in perhaps a logical space, but it goes to John's lattice of theories and formalized context, where for higher-end ontologies, especially in certain specific languages, you can characterize, in fact, two ontologies that are potentially even contradictory. It's just that what they have in common is something that's not contradictory. So you can maintain kind of local, well, you can maintain consistency, but you don't define it as a global consistency notion. And so it may be this notion of modularity that we want to move towards eventually. The second thing is other domains. In the federal government, there's a strong effort which is addressing communities of interest. Communities of interest are essentially ad hoc groups that come together in order to share information. A lot of times they're functional organizations. Army has to talk with the Air Force. But many other times they could be, in fact, totally ad hoc, some mission that has to be satisfied. But and there's a range of artifacts that are being produced, but there are some that are very very good. They understand, and the Air Force, in fact, has an enterprise vocabulary team, which is focusing on providing procedures, processes, education, strategies, guidelines in the development of these vocabularies. But these vocabularies are not just lists or your arbitrary ER diagram or something like that. They're defined, the terms are defined, they're modeled in OWL, for example, as a minimum requirement, and it spans everything from, you know, logistics, you know, human resource, financial, you know, command and control, you name it, the range of options in the Air Force. And then that's writ large, right, across the, you know, MITRE in particular, we satisfy, and we have sponsors that are in defense, which means the intelligence community too, but also FAA, the, you know, IRS and Treasury Department, and, you know, bioinformatics and various federal agencies that are related to that. But this organizational paradigm, if you will, communities of interest, is much larger than that. It's really at least the federal government and maybe beyond.
So I just wanted to say that, you know, I think to most people, author-defined modules for breaking up sort of sub-portions of an ontology for reuse makes a lot of sense. But a repository and a community supporting and working with more dynamic or arbitrary segments of ontologies creates a lot of risks for interoperability, and not necessarily by introducing distinctly contradictory terms, but just, you know, my use of my other terms with your concepts and things like that sounds risky. And I think just another point is that the greatest barriers to ontology reuse are always going to be the same as for source code, just basic complexity and documentation. And everything else is just kind of helping you get to those barriers faster.
All right, so we are running out of time. But what I just want people to walk away with, again, is I think in a lot of the discussions that we've had, even over the in preparation for the summit, things have been always kind of been abstract. I mean, we've been talking, you know, about a hypothetical ontology repository or whatever, and I really, well, I'm kind of in the habit of this, but if everyone could walk away with some homework, of again, kind of posting to the you know, the Ontolog Wiki, we'll I guess discuss like some kind of format for posting to it. But I mean, we tried this last year with the informal survey, but to have a way of gathering exactly, again, what ontologies people are using, what would actually populate, what kinds of ontologies that people are actually working on would populate a repository that we are discussing today and tomorrow, and kind of keeping it real, keeping this grounded in actual practice, and also just even identifying, like, if it's the case that if there's, what is there, like 50-something of us here? 60? If we're, each of us is actually working on a different ontology in a different domain that we actually wouldn't even be sharing with anybody else in the room, that would be a rather interesting repository too. But we need to kind of do this. We need to become more empirical. And so if that's the one thing we take away to think about and continue this work after the summit, I think that would be great. So with a few minutes to spare, Steve, did you have any other comments?
We're not over yet, of course. We've got tomorrow still. But, no, I think we probably have to wrap it up for today. Mark, you have a question?
Yes, where are the demos?
The demos are at the Holiday Inn tonight. So in some room to be disclosed when I get there. I don't know. It's probably one of those ballrooms on the ground floor or something. Thanks for a good day.